sisters. Well, here we are, tonight's party roundtable discussion, and we are going to discuss.
We are.
That's what we're here for. Sunday, the last day of January.
Your hosts includes me, Jason Robb.
And Rachel Pendergrove.
And Thomas Robb. Here we are, January 21st. And we're ready for
21st?
31st.
I was like, no, it's not the 21st.
I don't know really what the date was.
January 31st. Tomorrow's February 1st.
Awesome. I just know it's January and the weather here has been really nice this week.
In the 60s.
After several weeks of ice and snow, but not that bad. Not like the blizzard up on the East Coast.
Yeah, our East Coast listeners,
we're sorry.
Yeah, we're sorry to hear
that.
Yeah, all the feet of snow you got.
But we're glad you have it, we don't.
Exactly. Nice, sunny 60s here in Arkansas. But it'll probably start getting cold here in about a week or so. And our listeners in Florida,
they're laughing at us.
Out in the back porch in their lawn chairs and their shorts.
Yeah.
They're always like that. Yeah. So, snow, what's that?
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but did you see the article from Ann Coulter that was, I believe it was in VDare a few days ago.
No.
Just talking about Donald Trump and just the stamina that he has and just, you know, nothing like him before or since, you know. Most likely.
Well, there has been someone like him before.
There has.
Right.
A few.
But not in America in recent years.
Right. Well, he's not going along with the so-called establishment, you know, per se. I mean, usually when a presidential hopeful is running, and Ron Paul, I would put him in the same category as Donald Trump. From the standpoint, he's not the same Republican establishment.
Right.
But yeah, the Republican Party establishment, party bosses say, hey, you got to say this, you got to do that, mm-hmm. or whatever. Then all the ones that's running for the president are going to be going, oh, yeah, okay, that's right. You know, can you talk about that issue? Oh, okay, we won't. And Donald Trump is saying, no, I'm
going to
talk about whatever I want. The people want it, people are concerned about it, and they're not fault. The people are not following the Republican establishment. They're following him now.
Yeah. I want to say that some people can point out, like Glenn Beck has pointed out, and other people say, well, he's a progressive in this area, or he's progressive in that area. Whether he is or isn't, I don't know. And we are aware that there are certain things about Trump that we may not care for. But as far as I'm concerned, the deal breaker is the immigration.
Right.
That's the deal breaker, because as has been pointed out over the years, okay, we can lose our freedom. We can become under a dictatorship. We could be swallowed under Obamacare and every other liberal program there is. But as long as we retain our racial integrity and our racial nation, we can regain our freedom again. But if you destroy our blood, if you destroy our racial integrity, race mixing is forever. There's no coming back from that. That's the deal breaker, as far as I'm concerned. So Trump is his position on immigration. Now, maybe if he gets elected, he won't do that. Maybe he'll totally sell us out. We don't know that. But the others already admitted that. They already told us we're going to sell us out.
Yeah,
so they've already told us we're going to sell us out. They didn't use those words, but they've already told us that. So maybe Trump will help us out in that area. Another thing about Trump, if some people said that he just followed his ego. He just wants to be president. He's just doing whatever he can to get elected. Well, if that's the case, he could have taken his money and gone the establishment route a lot easier and a lot safer, because he has put a million dollars. He's put his career.
Billions of dollars on it.
Yeah, because you don't know. I mean, this guy's enormously wealthy, but, you know, Thomas Paine says the more a man has to lose, the less likely he is to venture. Well, Donald Trump is venturing.
And he's got a lot to lose.
And, I mean, most people, I know, as you well do, many, many, many people who won't even jeopardize their little career changing tires at Walmart and keep their politics quiet, because they want to keep their Walmart job. And I can understand that. I'm not condemning that. I can understand that. We need people working. But the point is that he has put a lot on the line. And if he would just follow the ego and become president, he could have put a huge amount of money in. He could have bought off Karl Rove. He could have bought off this one, bought off that one with millions of dollars, and he could follow the establishment route and get elected that way. He could
Ann Korakin on Resettlement Watch, RefugeeWatch.com, I believe it was her, that was talking about one of the, and Ann Coulter also had mentioned this, about one of the reasons that he was snubbing the Fox debates and was having such an issue with the Fox channel wasn't necessarily over Megyn Kelly, although that was, you know, a little part of the issue, but it was because of Murdoch, who's the founder and the head of Fox News,
right,
who is the main proponent and has pumped hundreds of millions of dollars into immigration reform. And then, you know, some of the other candidates like Rubio and Cruz, all these people and Republican leadership, people with Fox News, the founders and so forth, they've all been in the forefront of trying to bring more Mexicans into this country and more illegal aliens, more legal immigrants and so forth into this country, because they've been of the mindset that the way they're going to beat the Democratic Party is to submerge the Republican Party in new, you know, so-called Hispanic votes. And Donald Trump is like, no, we don't need that. We need to send them all back home. That's how we save America, make America great again, is to, you know, help the people and stock that's here.
Well, Ann Coulter has been pointing that out for, as well as others, but she comes to my mind for a number of years. She says the establishment Republicans are totally neglecting the vast swell of white voters who are just plain giving up on politics.
Yeah.
Right.
And that may be the case what's happening now as we see the resurgence.
And the thing is, when you have people such as Donald Trump, and let's say hypothetically he does become president, okay, all that, just because of the fact he becomes president, if he continues on with that policy of we're not going to help illegal aliens,
right,
we're going to return them, then there's also that percentage of these illegal aliens that are going to go back to their homeland naturally. Right. They're not going to have to be picked up. They're not right. going to have to be picked up by in a car or busload or a train. They're going exile themselves back because they know there's a policy now in the United States that you're not welcome here. You're not going to come here. If you want to be here, you got to go through the legal process. You know, if you want to use that liberal standpoint, but you don't get a free ride anymore. Or employees or employers, if you're hiring illegal aliens, you're going to be fined and sanctioned. And so those policies just in itself will cause the illegal aliens to naturally go back because employers are going to say, you can't work here anymore.
Yeah, if there's no jobs here, they'll go back.
They'll go back, you know?
Yeah, I was reading something a couple days ago. I forget the website. It's a very liberal website, though, very in support of, you know, illegal immigration and minority rights and stuff like that. Anyway, but they had this big study and dialogue with people in Iowa, but I thought it was so funny because they're like, here are the sentiments and opinions of 10 illegal undocumented workers in Iowa on their opinion of the presidential race. I was like, who the hell cares what the opinion of undocumented, you know, so-called undocumented workers on the presidential races. Why should we care? Of course, you know, they're going on about, well, if Trump is elected, you know, this will be very bad. You know, I've worked really hard to get here and I have, you know,
my family.
I crawled through the desert.
Yeah. You know, and I've been here for 20 years and just, you know.
So if you rob a bank and you get away with $20 million and you don't get caught for 20 years, you should be allowed to keep it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, about what amounts to.
Right. Right.
You know, same thing. I got away with it for a while, right. So I should now be forgotten about.
And they're just looking for the person who's going to give them the most free stuff.
Yeah, and so it's like, you know, like, yeah, 10 of them, you know. Well, one of them had started a business under some minority
Grant
deal. Yeah. Even though they're an illegal alien, there's another one that I'm in my.
There's this guy that comes out of TV all the time. He's an illegal alien. He boasts about it right on TV.
First year of college, and this is going to mean, you know,
first year of college, and a lot of those colleges are giving lower tuition rates. They give lower tuition rates to illegal aliens than they do to, you know, out of state citizens.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's just, everything is just totally.
However, with all this deal with Trump, people need to be aware as why the Knights is still the answer. Because I know some people may be saying, well, if Donald Trump, that's the answer now, get Trump elected. But here's why.
It's a Band-Aid.
Here's why I say that the Knights is still the answer. Number one is, follow scenario that Trump gets elected. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, we got 4 years of Trump. How are the demographics going to change in the next 4 years?
Right.
There's going to be some of these kids you see running around, Mexican kids that are 14 years old, are going to be 18 in 4 years. Mm-hmm. All right. So he wins this time by a slim margin. But what about 4 years from now? Will he get a re-election? But even if he does, 8 years is definitely down the tank. Mm-hmm. 8 years from now, you got 12-year-old kids, Mexican kids, who are going to be voting in 8 years. And you got a huge number of them. Them that became the citizens. So the deal breaker is going to be demographics. It's not who gets elected in 2016. The demographics over the next 4 to 8 years. So even if Trump gets elected, will that ultimately change anything for the future generations of our children? It will not. Maybe in the short term, it will give a glimmer of hope, like a flash of light in the dark. And you ever have a flashlight going out and it blinks and goes out? The blinks goes out. And then you're back in darkness again. And then, so that's if he gets elected. If he doesn't get elected, then the establishment party is going to say, see, that is what happens when you try to get somebody of that nature in office. And there will be a total abandonment by the Republican Party, total, of our social issues dealing with the we as a people have embraced over the years. And the Republican Party, if Trump loses, or if Trump gets elected, or not elected, if he gets nominated and loses, or if any conservative, and they all seem to be riding the fence of being a conservative right now, if they lose to a Democrat, the established Republicans are going to say, see, that's what happens. We need to embrace Mexicans. Why? Because so their party can stay in power. They don't care about the people. They don't care about the moms and dads out here trying to make a living. They don't care about our race, our heritage. They don't care about our children. They care about their political positions and power.
So, it's their gang colors.
Yeah. It's their gang colors. Absolutely.
That's all it is. You know, so, we're the elephant gang or we're the donkey gang.
That's it.
Yeah. And that's what it is.
Yeah. So if Trump gets elected, demographics will still be growing against us over the next 4 to 8 years. And if Trump don't get elected, then that's going to be proof, as far as they're concerned, that this old style approach to politics is over and done with. Remember the Newsweek magazine come out right after Obama's second election,
right?
And it says to the
GOP, end of white America.
Yeah, well, no, I'm talking about GOP. You're old. You're white. You're finished.
Yeah, right.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Well, and because people still don't understand. Everyone keeps on focusing on the illegal aliens. The illegal aliens. And yes, illegal aliens are a big problem.
That's a smokescreen.
But they don't understand of the legal aliens coming here. And so you got thousands and millions of legal aliens from your non-white countries that are coming here with the approval of the United States government that they get here, and they are still going to vote along their racial lines, along any party that's going to promote their own racial identity and racial programs. And it's not the same programs as the white people.
Right, absolutely. But, and, you know, like you say, is the legal aliens coming in, what makes me sick, and there's a lot of working class white people who don't necessarily like the moral issues that someone like a Bernie Sanders supports, but they like some of his economic ideas, or not necessarily even his economic ideas, but the fact that he's pointing out about the international corporations and free trade and things like that. They don't really understand the more Marxist, you know, communist type basis to it. But then they go, you know, they go for the Democratic side because they have been, and rightfully so, they've been, you know, listening and learning and acknowledging how the GOP leadership is backing the big business. And there's nothing wrong with big business. There's nothing wrong with free enterprise. But we don't have free enterprise in this system. We have a planned economy, which is capitalism. And I know Dad is, did a thing about, you know, that here 10, 12 years ago, about there's really not necessarily any difference between capitalism and communism. They're both, they're a different
manipulation of money.
It's both a manipulation of money.
It's
they,
not free
they manipulate it in different ways, but it's still manipulation of money. A planned economy, free enterprise does not include a planned economy, but they, you know, these white working class people, they look at the Republican Party or the Republican leadership and how they support these big business and the planned economy. And it's these big businesses that are on the forefront of promoting legal and illegal immigration into this country, of the H-1B visa program where they, you know, they're requesting, you know, an additional, you know, like 80,000 applications for non-wife to come in this country to work in the IT industry or healthcare industry and so forth. Oh, because, you know, supposedly they can't get enough skilled labor here. You got Chobani Yogurt, who was, you know, started probably out off of some minority loan by some Turkish guy in New York who's now up on the West Coast. He's putting in hundreds of millions of dollars to bring in non-whites, bring in refugees. He wants specifically refugees to come in and work in his plants. You have all these big business people who want this cheaper labor brought into the United States basically for their bottom line, so they have more money to line their pockets. And the GOP, they promote these type of concepts.
Right.
And so you got your working class whites who look at what the GOP is doing and how they manipulate things with big business, and they're like, well, we don't want any part of that. We're going to vote Democratic, even though they aren't necessarily for some of the Democratic issues like, you know, pro-abortion and things like that.
Well, case in point, you know when we talk, and you're absolutely right, Richard. You talk about people like Donald Trump, who, let's get elected, okay? Is he a racialist? Is he one that is going to look out for white people?
Right.
I mean, that's ultimately the question.
Right. Let me interject a thought right there.
Okay.
If he follows the Constitution and the natural law of the land, then the white people automatically come
would
out
excel.
On top.
Right.
Will excel.
Right. Yeah.
Right, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what I was saying is the fact is, you know, even on a hypothetical, you know, that let's say Donald Trump is elected, okay, and you stop, you know, some of these illegal immigrations, and then we talk about, okay, you still got your legal immigrants coming
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
Just a case in point, okay, is, you know, we hear about all these refugees coming into in Europe, you know,
mm-hmm.
and yes, there's a little bit of refugees coming to the United States, but most people, and again, this is, I'm talking about the legal aspect
right.
of immigrants coming in the United States. There in the last few months, and most people are not aware of this, last just few months, 2 or 3 months, there's been over 50,000 Cubans that have come in the United States, okay? And most people are not aware of it. There is, in 1995, there was a revision, and here's an article, but it's a revision of what's called the Cuban Adjustment Act of 1966, which basically says, and it was revised in 1995, that says that there was a policy between the United States and Cuba that says, under the wet foot, dry foot policy, if you caught Cubans out on the ocean, then the United States said, okay, we will turn them back, you go back to Cuba. However, if they come up on the land of the United States enter the United States on dry land, then they are expeditiously, within a year, they get to go and can apply for citizenship, okay, and become citizens. I mean, very quickly, fast track, mm-hmm. within a year, okay? So the last 2 or 3 months, okay, there's been talk about halting the policy, the wet foot, dry foot policy with Cuba. And as a result of that, over 40 to 50,000 Cubans have bought plane tickets, have bought plane tickets, have bought boat tickets to Central America, most notably Ecuador, because Ecuador has free visas to Cuba. So they say, Cubans, you can come in Ecuador free. There's no thing. And as a result of that, then they start migrate north through all your Central American countries, into Mexico, into the United States. Once they hit United States, they're automatically, I'm a Cuban, you get to go, it's a free pass. You're not a legal alien because you're under that act that you're a Cuban. Yeah. And so automatically, within a year, you're fast-tracked to becoming a citizenship. And so within 2 or 3 months, there's been over 50,000 Cubans that have come to the United States. That is just one policy that we talk about regarding legal immigration.
Right, yeah.
And people don't think about that. Yeah, they're crossing the borders, but they have legal status once they get here.
Well, the politicians keep talking about it. They come in legally. It don't make a difference how they come in.
Right.
The demographics change.
Exactly.
And people can't figure that out. Who cares if they come in legally? And like it's been pointed out, in a sense, that does indicate racism. If coming illegally, the only criteria is to open the borders and make it all legal.
Yeah, right. You're just legal to come in.
Yeah, just make it legal. If they're just concerned about the legality of the law, then just make...
change the law.
Just make come across Mexico. And that's what they wanted, the immigrants.
That's what immigration reform is.
Yeah.
That's
Fox News. So,
Right.
So there's a higher standard than just whether they came legal or illegally.
Right.
And the higher standard is do they represent the culture of our people?
Right.
And even something that is of interest too is you hear so often people say if they come here and they assimilate, well, that is being pointed out, and rightfully so, that is being pointed out as racism. Who are we to say our way of living, you have to assimilate to our way of living?
Mm-hmm.
Who says we have a better way or a better method or a better culture, better values, a better morals?
Why should they lose their culture?
Right. So they come here and we say, you have to assimilate. Why do I have to assimilate? Are you implying your way of life is better than my way of life? And so that's to facing the egalitarians, that's a good argument.
Right.
And back then when Europeans came here, and it was a white country, yes, you could assimilate because we all had the same blood, we had the same culture, we had the same traditions. You know?
You might have had a different language here or there, and they had a different folk dance than this country's folk dance.
But they had the same
like
things.
That. But they're Christians.
You could assimilate, you know, but you can't assimilate a Christian country where you have someone that's a Buddhist that is bent on bringing their culture to the United States and changing it. They're never going to assimilate. It will never happen. So when the test is America.
They can't assimilate. That's the point. They cannot assimilate.
They cannot assimilate. So the test is whoever is ever going to be elected president, are they going to be a racialist from the standpoint, are they going to want to keep America a white Christian European country?
Right.
And if they don't have that desire, if it's not really a focus point, then it's just a matter of time that the United States will no longer be a white Christian country. And we're basically on the brink of that now. And that's why we see this mess. You know? But with all of that, kind of a stepping stone here to I think some of the next things to kind of talk about is the fact that there are people in the United States, there are white people that see what's happening. They see the future generations at stake. They see the genocide that's coming, and people are waking up. You know, people are concerned about it. And we are seeing a lot of that with our teenagers, our white teenagers. Right. We see a lot of them knowing that there's something happening. They see the destruction around them in their school systems. They see the destruction in their neighborhoods where white teenagers, white people in general, are basically the enemy. And we are getting a lot of people, a lot of teenagers joining the youth corps. And that is something really exciting to see. Because last several months, we have seen a tremendous increase of application in the youth corps from white teenagers.
Well, so many people talk about saving the youth and saving young people and children and teens and so forth. But you know, they don't have a plan to do that. And plus, they aren't really including them in the plan of white Christian revival. They're not including them. They're not looking that, okay, these are teenagers now, but in 10, 15 years, there are future leaders. And so how are they going to be trained? How are they going to be educated? What kind of, you know, discipline will they be given? What kind of vision will they be instilled with to be able to lead and be instrumental in helping this revival?
Well, last several episodes, you know, I've been bringing just a few of the
examples
of applications from teenagers across the country that have joined the youth corps. And I just brought three of them. There were several of them, but I just brought three of them. We have one named Cody from South Carolina. Okay, Cody from South Carolina. He's in the 10th grade. And he wrote, "I want to stand up for what's right again. I want to keep our heritage alive. I want to make America great again." So that was a 10th grader, Cody.
Oh, that's 15 years old.
From South Carolina. We have another one, Josh, also from South Carolina. We've been getting a lot from South Carolina because they have a governor that does not represent South Carolina, the traditional South Carolina. You know, and there was
she represents
India.
And in the last Time Magazine,
New Delhi or something.
Time Magazine, they had her picture and said, "This is the new South."
Yeah. Right.
You know, and so you
just
got
shoving in her face.
Shoving in our face. And so you have Josh from South Carolina in the 9th grade. Totally different town. They're not friends or anything like that. Totally different town. Says why he wanted to join, because "I'm tired of seeing whites and blacks mix in our school and a pretty white girl dating a black boy. It's a disgrace to our race." Wow. You know? So he, you know, he probably sees the race mixing that's going on in his schools and that's that racial instinct.
Right.
You know, that he sees. And then there's another one, Jude from California, 10th grade. And this is the best one so far that I've read here recently. But he says, "I believe the Knights of the KKK can help inspire, educate, and motivate me to do something about the latter. I want to get involved in the Klan before it is too late for my race. Now, I am not racist or hateful against black people, but I want to preserve a white Christian America. My hope is that I can be included in this group to contribute and learn from it and save the USA."
That's
the best reasoning, but 10th grade from California, you know. Yeah. And so that's just three of examples of people that have joined this week.
Right. Yeah, I want to add to that. Those are three examples of people that join. But knowing how people react to messaging, there are hundreds of kids who did not join yet, but they're reading the site and they're being influenced and they're thinking positively. Might not have joined yet, but they're thinking positively. They maybe still haven't got over the media hype and the things they heard in school and so forth. So they have perhaps a little bit of restraint and actually filling out that online application. But the point is, there are hundreds of kids because our site is massive. We get thousands of people visit our site every day. And there's young kids who are sitting there and learning and reading and educating themselves, even though they may not actually fill an application this time.
Right.
And fill an application is pretty simple. We don't ask for any personal information. Basically, ask for a name and an email address.
Their name, their date of birth to verify they're between 13 and 17 years of age. The state and their email, you know.
So we don't know personal information.
No personal information. Because really, the youth corps is an educational process. It's for them to read articles, to take the Youth Corps Academy course, where they can learn about America, learn how we used to be a white Christian country.
The correct history.
The correct history.
Right.
You know, and give them a really an accurate view of what America really was and what it can be. And so you're right, Dad. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of teenagers that get on there. They're reading it. Well, there was one I didn't bring over, but a kid who joined said that his grandfather is all in favor, you know. His mother is really not in favor, but she allowed him to go ahead and sign up, even though she's not.
She probably looked over the site, though.
Right. She probably looked over the site. Not really a big fan of it, but he said his grandfather was and was all in favor for him to do this. And so he went ahead and did it. You know, and of course, I emailed him back saying, well, your mom just want to make sure that, you know, you're being taken care of and that.
She may not be against the Klan as much as she may
the stereotype.
Being protective of him.
Right.
And hearing what she hears on the news.
Right.
She may have a concern. Yeah.
But, you know, so you got kids like that are joining and signing up, going through the educational process. And they're reading articles. They're seeing what's going on. They see that there's other teenagers across the United States that has the same concern as they do. And teenagers nowadays, I mean, it's all social media. Right. They know what's going on all across the country, all across the world. They see this uprising. They see this resistance growing within white people in America. And they want to do something. Because
and
like
in Europe.
In Europe.
It's growing at a phenomenal rate.
You know, because like you have always said, Rachel, you know, teenagers instinctively have a lot of energy. We're going to conquer the world. That's just what a teenager have. They have
very
the hopes
idealistic.
And dreams. Idealistic. And so they have that. And so we can put them on that course of path,
right.
A positive course of path,
right.
then my opinion is the non-whites, the establishment, watch out. Because white people are coming.
Right,
the future generation is coming.
People are getting angry. You saw that story there in Sweden, I think, or young, I don't know if you saw it, Rachel or Jason, but a young 15-year-old girl was brutally assaulted, thrown to the ground, attempted to be raped by some Arab. She reaches into a pocket, pulls out a can of pepper spray, and she sprays them to ward off her attacker. And when the police come out, who do they charge? They charge her for having pepper spray.
Yeah, because it's an illegal weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, deadly weapon. You're not supposed to have it.
She's the one that got in trouble.
Yeah.
And but things like that are making people mad.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think I talked about that on the White Women's Perspective, and we've got it on our website. And then I believe the Teen Talk discussed that episode. But yeah, young people are, and it's interesting too because there's various waves. You know, you go back to the 60s and 70s, back when early 70s when busing first, really was being undertaken across the country, and you had huge protests, and you had families, and you had whole neighborhoods come out and very angry at busing and so forth, and then pretty soon, it's like, we didn't stop it. And then
was here.
And then it kind of dwindled down and they just kind of like stuck to watching TV and doing their thing. And
private schools begin to grow.
Yeah, yeah. Private schools
homeschooling
grow and so forth.
Spot off of that.
And, but, you have the kids that were raised during that time who I think were kind of raised possibly in kind of a negative, pessimistic environment because they're raised by parents, a lot of parents, certainly not in our case, but a lot of parents at that time, they were unable to stop the busing. They were unable to stop a lot of these things. So they just quit trying. They might have, been talking around the house about, good grief, this is going on, and, spouting off little bits of rhetoric here and there, but more pessimistic. And so the children raised up during that time, the 80s and so forth, they grew up maybe with some racial consciousness, but very pessimistic. But now their kids, the teenagers and stuff today, their kids, they're looking around and they're seeing that, there was busing back in mom and dad's day or grandparents' day. Well, now the demographics has hugely changed. Now they're like shoving white privilege courses and classes and seminars and all types of events. I mean, it's just like overload, totally super overload. And so you got like teenagers just everywhere, and they're not really being burdened down by the same type of pessimism. They feel kind of like we better do something quick.
Yeah,
because you know, back during the busing days, we were still a majority white country.
Right.
And the internet provided information to them that was not available
right
30, 40 years ago.
Right.
But with that demographics changing, now it's a matter of just plain survival. I mean, it's not like, okay, we're going to move 20 miles further, move another town. Now it's like, my life is in danger.
Yeah.
I'm going to be killed. So their ancestors and their blood is awakening them.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like you said, that they're berserk.
Yeah.
It basically is to the point that white teenagers literally see them being extinct. I mean, they're seeing a matter of survival and their basic instinct.
They're feeling a genocide.
Yeah. And when you feel like you're about to get destroyed and be destroyed, you get to the point you don't care anymore. I mean, yeah. You just really don't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And not caring more about to the point of, oh, we're going to do something violent.
I don't care if you're being called a racist.
Yeah, they don't care about calling racist. I'm going to do something proactive from the standpoint within the political scene of trying to awaken people, you know? And so you call me a racist, you want to call me a bigot, I don't really care. It's a matter of white survival, you know? And so that's where that's coming to that point. Is that these teenagers don't care if they're being called racist. They don't care if they're being called homophobe. They don't care if they're whatever they don't care.
Labels, right?
You know, it's like, I have a right to exist. I have a right to pass this this racial, being proud of who I am, being pass this culture, my heritage to my generation, to my children down the road. And I don't care if you call me a racist or a bigot. I have that basic human right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to allow you to deter me anymore, you know. And they're being bold enough, you know.
Yeah,
it just is. I have another thing. I just love reading emails from these white teenagers because I mean, really, it helps inspire. I think the older generation
right. Saying,
"Hey, if these kids can do stuff,
right,
you should be able to do stuff too.
Right.
You should be able to be inspiring me, hopeful." But we have this kid from Tommy from Oklahoma. He sent this to me actually on Martin Luther King Day at 6:53 a.m. And he says, "Hey, Jason, I'm at the Day of Disgrace parade holding a Confederate flag,
awesome.
Trying to tell the people he was nothing but a crook and a snake. Why do people have to be so ignorant? It's in Tulsa. I took off work for it."
Cool.
So he's at the parade, holding a Confederate flag, you know, trying to warn people, passing
awesome.
Out the National Day of Disgrace flyer that the Youth Corps generated through all its members, you know,
right. Nationwide.
He's down there passing out literature, holding a Confederate flag. I mean, so here's a kid who's inspired. He's wanting to try to warn people and educate people, you know, and that should give everyone hope that it's not all lost.
Right.
Well, even Bill O'Reilly has said here a while back, at least twice, make comment over the last couple of years, he said the charge of racism doesn't mean anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean, and because it's the name calling that intimidates people. And once the name calling loses its impact, then what do they have left? There's nothing left.
There isn't.
People don't care anymore.
Well, right. And people are starting to feel a little bit freer to make
older
opinions and statements. Julia Dempsey is an actress. I think she's in her late 50s, early 60s now. Still quite beautiful, but she was a model. She's from the UK. She's an actress and so forth. And she's stated here about a week ago about the Oscars and, you know, this boycott about the Oscars and so forth that, well, she didn't see what the big deal is. She didn't understand why they're trying to boycott it. They've got black entertainment stuff and it's basically just, you know, about trying to negate white people.
Yeah.
And of course, they've all come out. Bethany Frankel, now she's a part Jewish, but nevertheless, most people look at her and consider her white. She's a star of Housewives of New York or something like that. She's kind of a famous lady. I don't know if you guys even know who she is, but anyway, I don't watch those shows. But any type of women's entertainment, she's out there and she's on talk shows and stuff. But she's in trouble because she sent a couple tweets out a couple days ago about being at a local Kmart and a bunch of Mexicans just standing around not following the registers. Couldn't understand what any of the clerks were saying because they weren't even speaking English. There's some little Mexican kids fighting over tennis shoes, and she was like, can't anybody learn to speak English anymore? Why are they even coming here? This isn't their country.
Yeah.
And so everybody's, you know, calling her racist and this and that. And she was like, I don't care. I'm not going to apologize. She said, I don't know why they're coming here anyway. And they don't even want to learn our language. Well, I don't even care if they learn our language. They shouldn't be here in the first place. And I'm not going to apologize. People've called me a bitch before, and they can keep calling me a bitch. I don't care. Well, you know? But, I mean, just people are, you know.
That's just one example.
Yeah, you know, and then like, there's, I forget the lady's name, another actress talking again about the, you know, black boycott of the Oscars and so forth. And she had made a statement.
The boycott will be a safer place to go to.
Yeah. She had made a statement here about 6 months ago to Raw Story News about how people were saying that, you know, there's not enough blacks and minority representation in the Academy Awards and Oscars and so forth. And she said, well, you know, really we need better parts for, you know, we need more parts for women and stuff like that. She didn't really see it as a racial issue. But then someone was talking to her about that remark here a few days ago. And she said, well, I guess about, so in relation to that remark, which was actually a remark about women's roles, she said, well, I guess if I was a black woman, no one would criticize me. She said, because black women seems to be, they can get away with saying anyone. They're like the token people that can get away with saying anything and nobody's going to criticize them. I guess because I'm white, I'm supposed to keep my mouth shut, but I'm not going to. So, again, you know, just more people are kind of feeling comfortable with speaking their mind.
Right, and, you know? And even though that doesn't directly relate to race, it still, what I'm going to say, indicates people are starting to get angered with the control that political correctness has.
Right.
And that is that you're finding more and more Hollywood entertainers
mm-hmm.
who are coming out as conservatives. Right. Not coming out as racist or like that, or white nationalist, like that, but still coming out, they're starting to buck.
But for Hollywood is a big thing.
Yeah.
To say I'm pro-life.
Right.
Or
and
something.
There's a numerous ones I saw on TV the other day. Numerous well-known, entertainers who are coming out as conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are supporting Donald Trump. And
I think Kelsey Grammer is one of them.
Kelsey Grammer, Victoria Principal from the yeah. Saturday Night, used to be on Saturday Night
Chuck
Live.
Norris.
Yeah.
Chuck Norris.
Clint Eastwood has made statements.
Yeah.
Of course, I know he's... So I think married to a high yeller.
Right. So these other people aren't coming out as racist.
Right. But he's still making statements because he sees what's happening.
Yeah. And then there's this other guy who used to be on the news, Saturday Night Live to the news. What was his name?
Only one I can think of on their
news updates.
Kevin Nealon. But
No. This
Norm McDonald.
Norm McDonald. But that's not the guy I'm thinking of. He comes on Fox News now a lot. This guy.
Oh, Dennis.
Dennis Miller.
Dennis Miller.
Oh.
And others, too, that I can't even think of. But
making racialist statements, they're at least saying something.
Anti-establishment.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, but, you know, the awakening begins.
Well, the pendulum is always going to swing. The pendulum's been swung this way for a number of years, and it's get slowly swinging back the other direction. Just next time the pendulum swings back, we need to make sure it doesn't swing back the other way again, you know?
I always kind of hated that analogy of the pendulum swinging, because I always figured, well, that means we're going to win just for a short time and we lose again.
Yeah, so. I realize that, but I mean, it's not that you win.
Like
it's
meaningless.
Not that you win for a short time. It's that, just like you talk about in your sermons, Dad, you have revival, parents don't teach your children,
yeah.
The children grow up not being educated, not having a love for their people and their heritage, and the pendulum swings.
Yeah, I mean, even though I don't like the analogy, I mean, I know it's a reality.
Parents don't do their duty.
You look all through the Bible, and Israel
exactly.
repented, Israel did evil, son of the Lord, then they repent, Israel did evil, son of the Lord, then they repent, then again, Israel did evil, son of the Lord, back and forth.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the whole, you know, that's the whole goal is, you know, through the course of history is for people to actually once and for all learn their lesson.
Yeah.
You know, love your people, love your heritage, don't race mix, cherish your Lord and Savior, do what's right, you know, and
because race is the issue.
Yeah.
And that's the key to everything.
It's the only issue.
Yeah, and parents
the
have
only
to
issue that matters.
Teach their children right, you know, not just...
And so that's why when the pendulum is swinging our direction, when it gets to the maximum, we got to break that pendulum.
Break it doesn't swing back. We're stopping it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But part of that pendulum, part of that swinging direction is giving people hope and inspiring them to further on this white Christian revival. And a good way to do that is a Faith and Freedom Conference.
Absolutely.
Right. And because, like you said, Jason, it's important because even though I'd say I don't like the analogy of the pendulum swinging back and forth, I know it's still a reality. But the point is, if we don't enforce the pendulum to re-swing back in our direction, then we forever stay in darkness.
Right.
So the point is, do we want to stay in darkness forever? No. So the pendulum got to go back and swing back our direction and swing it back in the direction
that would bring revival to our people.
Yeah, and then keep it up there as long as possible until generations from now. Who knows what will happen. But right now, in our generation, we got to work for the future of our people.
Well, and a big part of that is the Faith and Freedom Conference.
Right.
Conferences, meetings are vitally important.
People don't come. I don't think they understand that.
They don't. People, like I said, people have, the internet's been a blessing, but it also has been a curse. And part of that curse is people sometimes don't feel the desire to go and travel to be around like-minded people. They can just get on the internet, go to a social media group, you know, hey, I'm networking with people, which is great. That's what you need. That's the time.
But it's just them. It's not the family.
Right. You have to include the family, and you have to take that family, you have to go to a conference. You have to take some type of action so your children and your grandchildren see you taking an important step in preserving their future. And you do that by coming to meetings, coming to conferences. And the Faith and Freedom Conference is just one of those conferences. It's a vital conference because it really is a place for the family. It's located at the Soldiers Cross Bible Camp, about 30 miles south of Branson, Missouri. In the beautiful Ozarks.
People can fly right into Branson.
Or even Harrison.
We haven't got our airport built yet.
Yeah. But people can fly
into Harrison. We get a runway built. Yeah. There are people putting their private planes, but they haven't built their runway yet.
They haven't done it yet.
Well, and real quick, Jason, you know, this past week, I had like an hour to kill just in between some different projects. And so I went online, and I was looking at just short 5-minute clips of different conferences and meetings of different, you know, racialist, white nationalist, patriotic, whatever you want to call it, conference groups and things like that. I looked at a couple in Germany. I looked at some that was held in D.C. I looked at one that was held in Florida, out in California, Nevada. Just a good cross-section of clips of conferences, meetings, so forth, that was held over the past year. And I got to say, well, when I was a teenager, I didn't mind going to stuff like that because, you know, we've always been very politically active. And even as a teenager, I enjoyed sitting and listening to what some people might consider long, boring speeches. But I mean, really, the reality is most teenagers and kids do not want to do that. And so putting myself into their position, I was thinking, good grief, there's no way I would want to give up my weekend to go sit at any of these conferences because they were long, dull, and boring. I'm not trying to criticize people, but hey, that was just the reality. And that's why, you know, when we say the word, you know, Faith and Freedom Conference, it is not a long, dull montage of boring speaker after boring speaker. I mean, this is like a
family retreat.
Yeah, it's a family retreat with like families and kids and open spaces and playgrounds and music and food
and walking around the high chairs and
good speakers and good information
and music
and literature booths and stuff, but also, you know, classes for kids. I mean, it's
beautiful,
it's totally unique. There's
beautiful sitting area in the evening for people to sit, listen to the bubbling creek coming down the hillside.
Well, just a simple aspect that you can attend a conference where it's privately secluded, It is not right in the middle of a downtown city where you have to be concerned about safety of your children, safety of you. Make sure you don't go down that street because you could get a rape or mug or something like that.
Yeah.
There's over 100 acres here. It's privately owned. It's in a white community, but there's no houses or buildings or anything like that.
It's a white community that may not be members of Knights, but is favorable to the Knights.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, we're not in a hostile white community.
No,
we are in a friendly white community.
Friendly white community, but it's a nice, relaxed atmosphere. We have a bonfire at night. Ice cream
beautiful
social
conference center.
We have games for the kids. We have nature hikes. For the teenagers,
we worked really hard to basically put on a really good show and event for the entire family.
And that's vitally, vitally important because you have to include your family. You can't leave your spouse behind. You can't leave your children behind. They need to be included in this because their future is at stake. And if they don't see you putting importance on this cause, they're not going to place importance on it either.
Right, right. And, you know, somebody might say, well, you know, I don't know if my kids or my, you know, teenagers would want to go. Well, you know what? There's one real simple way to solve that. It's like, get your butt in the backseat of the car. We're going to Arkansas.
Oh, you mean before they'll try to be a parent?
Yeah. Are you the boss or are you not the boss?
Let me say this. If the kids don't want to go, that means mom and dad have not making the movement seem appealing to them.
Right.
And they're not talking to them about the importance of their survival.
Right. But it's more than talking to them. Their actions, their attitude has got to be appealing. If they look grumpy and complaining all the time about what the N-words are doing and what's happening here, and they're just grumpy and unhappy and complaining all the time, who wants to be around that?
Right.
Right.
But if they understand that this is a message of hope, there's hope here, there's deliverance. You know, we're not going to just sit here and tell you about all the things that's going wrong in the country. Anybody go on the internet and watch that. But there is hope and deliverance that is found here. And if parents will understand that, grasp a hold of that, recognize that they're part of a movement of revival and have enthusiasm and excitement, their children will then get that excitement from them.
Right.
But they're just sitting around grumping, complaining about what their N-words are doing. And doesn't make it look, in a sense, fun, then the kids aren't going to be inspired.
Or if you had the parents saying, well, I'll be dead and gone, so I guess I won't have to worry about
that
it.
Happens
too. Thanks, Mom and Dad. You're leaving me with this mess, and you're going to be dead and gone?
Yeah, I mean, this should be like the overall passion of the family. When your teenagers are, you know, looking for their career path and what they're going to do in the future and where they're going to live and, you know, what they're going to study in college, they should already have been educated well enough at home and have already developed a passion that the number one priority when they're deciding on their future career path in life, their number one priority should be, and naturally to them, not something you have to tell them, naturally they're going to think, how is my career path, how is it going to affect the cause, how is it going to enable me to be a victor and a warrior for the cause? Is it going to enable me to be a warrior because it's going to pay really good and I can help finance this revolution? Is it going to help me fight, you know, as an attorney in the courts of law? Is it going to help me because it's a type of career that I come into contact with a lot of people and I can, you know, choose and look at different clients or different people I come to contact with and selectively choose those people I'm going to, you know, help educate and bring into the cause. I mean, they should naturally be looking at their career path as what it's going to do for the cause. And if you've done your job right, you're not going to have to tell them, okay, it's time to look at what you're going to do for college. This is what you need to consider. They're going to just naturally do that themselves because they consider themselves as a warrior and they're going to plan their future life in such a way.
Right.
And also means looking for future spouses.
Absolutely.
Right. That's right.
I mean, you want them to date someone that has that same desire to benefiting the cause, that want to promote, you know, racial pride.
They'll be wanting to look for something
absolutely
like that.
You're not teaching them, then they're going to grow up and marry, hopefully, a white girl, you know. But is that white girl going to want or white girl or white boy. I shouldn't say white girl, but the spouse that they marry, are they interested in promoting this white pride and white integrity? Are they interested in that, or are they like, no, don't be involved in that? Those are all the different aspects a parent needs to be raising their child.
Yeah. When you all come to a conference like this, you should be coming with as much excitement as you would have if you said, hey, I got tickets to the
Disney World.
Disney World.
We're going to Disney World.
Yeah, same rally or.
Yeah, should be the same excitement.
An awesome concert.
You know? And so you got to build that excitement, build that enthusiasm, you know, as your child grows, show excitement for this movement, the excitement of a future of America that we're going to have, not the one that they're trying to paint for us, because they are trying to paint a dismal America, and we want people to know that there can be a turnaround, God can touch this nation again. He has always done it in the past. It may be in our darkest hour, but sometimes we have to be brought to our darkest hour before we repent.
And that's why we have to ultimately know that God is going to protect his people. He's going to protect the covenant people. And we recognize that we are the covenant people. And so we know that it's going to happen, but we are also his tool. And we have to be usable in order to be a tool for him. And if you're not usable, like you've always said, Dad, if you have an old rusty hammer, you're not going to want to use that hammer. You want to use the hammer that's usable. And we as individuals have to be a tool for God.
Right. And, you know, and there's one reason I believe that, you know, the Ku Klux Klan, you know, after the war between the states, Civil War, whatever you want to call it, Northern aggression, other than saving the, you know, the southern states and the white population at that time, that success, that put the Ku Klux Klan on a vision or a journey, and put it on the map as being, I mean, world famous as being an organization of white people with a history of success and victory. And that is something that no one has ever forgotten. And, you know, People sometimes they kind of poo-poo the name Ku Klux Klan, but you know we know that it's, you know, divinely inspired. They won for our people at that time. Everyone in the world knows of the reputation of the Ku Klux Klan and its stand for white people, and we're putting it on a firm biblical basis and foundation, a family basis, and we're putting it together with smart long-term strategy and vision and modern progressive ideas. I don't mean progressive like some people paint it, Glenn Beck, but progressive as in modern techniques combined with a good strategy, long-term vision, and that famous name. And that's going to help us carve a new America out.
Well, because the enemy knows that the Klan doesn't compromise.
Right.
They know the Klan doesn't compromise. They know the Knights don't compromise.
And that's why they have to continually
exactly, because
knock it and twist the information about it and lie.
Because they know that the Klan, the Knights, really basically, they don't compromise and stands for white people. I mean, that we don't stand for certain issues. Our issue is race. Our issue is that we have
a
racial integrity that we are going to stand up for.
Right.
We never have faltered from it. We have never backed down from it. And we can't be bought. We can't be sold. You can't do anything. The Klan is always going.
They've already called us the worst things possible.
Yeah, they're going to call us racist. Ooh, big, that hurts our feelings. So what? You know? And so they know that that doesn't affect the Klan at all.
The Klan's name is so powerful that if they want to denigrate anybody at all, any religious, education, entertainment, or political leader,
or other right-wing white nationalists.
Yeah, if they want to denigrate anyone, they immediately go and compare them to the Ku Klux Klan, because the Ku Klux Klan is the benchmark of racial integrity in this country. And is it known as extremist? You betcha. But when our country's balkanized, people are going to be saying, hey, I want that organization. They've got good strategy. They've got the history. They've got the reputation. That is a winning team.
Yeah, they're not looking for a Republican Party. They're not looking for a Democratic Party. And they're not even going to be looking for
some racialist institute.
Yeah, some called racialist organization. They want an organization.
That's a real deal.
They want an organization that has been tested time and time over and over again through the centuries. And the Klan is, like you said, Rachel, is that benchmark.
Yeah. All right, listen, we only got a few moments here. But we talked about the Faith and Freedom Conference, but I don't think we, it does, it's April 29, 30, and May 1. Then go onto our website at KKK.com. They'll see a banner on there. They can register
Follow
online.
Follow the link to the main site.
Yeah. But. You need to come. I can't emphasize how important it is for you to come. And if you're not a member, they, you can still come. And I don't know how that indicates on that, Rachel, but they can still come.
It's not a Klan meeting. No, it's for any racially
white patriots.
Yeah, white patriots.
Right.
Yeah.
And
if they want more information, they can email us or they can call at 870-427-3414 between 9 and 5 Monday
and
through Friday, or 10 and 5 Monday through Friday
at Central Time.
Yeah.
So you definitely go, you need to get up right now, walk over to your calendar and mark it on your calendar before you forget. You need to do it now while you're thinking about it, because this is important. This is a big deal. This is a big deal.
Yeah.
Right.
Not this conference, but being involved in a struggle for the future of your children is a big deal. People spend a lot of time trying to figure out where the child's going to go to college. That's important. But compared to the future and survival of our people, going to college is a small deal.
Yeah, there's nothing more important
than
your
brain. We've already got people registering. This is going to be a really big deal this year.
It was the 50th anniversary of you and Mom being married, as well as 50 years of your ministry.
Right. So April 29.
Speakers.
Yeah. April 29, April 30, and May 1. So mark your calendar now. Get on board and register. We want to see you here at that time. So until next time, this is Thomas Robb,
Jason Robb,
Rachel Pendergraft,
and we're reminding you to love your God and love your people.